Okay, we're learning Tanya. We're on page 10.
So, 10 is in Hebrew?
No.
He's in English?
No, sorry. Have you got two... right, sorry. There's a numbering system at the top of the page. There's a numbering system at the bottom and at the top in the English Tanyas. So it'll be... On every second page, there's a number. So this is... It's always on the right-hand side, I think.
Got it.
You got it? Or is it left-hand side? Definitely. Okay, right. Well, we actually started... I think this is either the third or fourth time that we've been through most of the Tanya anyway. So we're starting again. And basically, this has been described as the Bible of Hasidic teachings. I'm giving an introduction because Michael hasn't been introduced to this book yet, although the others have been, but it's no harm in hearing things again for those that have heard it before.
Okay.
So this book was written by the first Rebbe, the first leader of the Lubavitch dynasty. The Lubavitch dynasty, dynasty in the sense of a series of leaders who follow on from one generation to the other. The founder of the Lubavitch dynasty was called Rabbi Shneur Zalman of Liadi. He didn't actually live in the town of Lubavitch. Lubavitch is the name of a small town in Russia. So he actually lived in two other towns not far away called Liadi and Lyozhna at different times. But when he was a boy, he actually studied in Lubavitch. That's not so well known. He was an unbelievable genius. And he was a follower of the Hasidic movement that was founded by Rabbi Israel Baal Shem Tov, Rabbi Israel the Baal Shem Tov, that means literally the master of the good name, who was born in 1698 and passed away in 1760. He was followed, he had a number of different pupils, disciples, and he was followed by a successor who was called Rabbi Dov Ber of Mezerich, name of another town. And he took over from the Baal Shem Tov a year after the Baal Shem Tov passed away. The Baal Shem Tov passed away on Shavuos. And for the first year, his son took over the leadership. But it became apparent after a year that he was not the one. And after 1 year, in 1761, Rabbi Dov Ber took over the reins of leadership. And he passed away in 1773, if I remember rightly. So he wasn't leader for that long, only 12 years. So he was unwell,
apparently. He had
problems with his feet and so on. So the policy was the leader has disciples. And these disciples, like, spread out to different areas, and they, you know, like a tree with seeds. And so Rabbi Dov Ber had also a large number of disciples. And he told them to spread around Eastern Europe, and go to various places, and like to, you know, bring the teachings to the people of those areas. Now, he had, I think it was the Baal Shem Tov had 60 pupils, and he had 120, something like that. And also, one of his main pupils was Rabbi Shneur Zalman of Liadi, who was a very young man. He was born in 1745. So when he went to his master, he was only 19. And in 1764, approximately, 1819, a young man, he went to learn under the aegis of Rabbi Dov Ber. And he progressed. I mean, he had an unbelievable mind, a genius of the first order, absorbed everything he learned immediately, and remembered everything he learned immediately. So he was, you know, unbelievably deep. And he was obviously the right candidate to send to conquer Lithuania. I don't mean with guns, but with ideas.
With influence.
Hasidic ideas. With influence, absolutely right. Because Lithuania was known as the Jerusalem of Europe. It was the place where Torah teachings were paramount. The Vilna Gaon, the great Gaon of Vilna, lived in Vilna, which is in Lithuania. And his influence, although he passed away, I think, in 1798, approximately, but his influence was very strong. And there was a tremendously high level of intellectual, you know, Torah learning. Very, very high level. You're talking about people that knew the whole Talmud off by heart. That kind of level. Now the Talmud, as I mentioned the other 2 weeks ago when we were talking about Maimonides, is a 63 volume work with great intricacy and intellectually challenging, you know, to the nth degree. And then you've got Rashi and the Tosfos, the additional comments and so on. Very deep and very difficult to master. And yet you have people that, you know, there's a tradition that you had people that were such, had such photographic memories and knew it so thoroughly that they would, you could take a Talmudic volume, a volume of Talmud, and they would say, right, take a pin and pierce, like, press the pin into the top page and pierce through, let's say, 20 pages. And then they would say, right, they'll look at the word on the first page, which word was pierced on the first page, and then without looking, they would tell the person who had done the piercing, which are the words that have been pierced on all the other pages. That's how, it was all like, locked in their minds.
Photographic.
But they understood it as well. Photographic can mean you're just taking a photo. The camera doesn't understand what it's seeing. But they knew it and understood it, as well as have it in front of their eyes. That's the kind of scholarship that people were talking about. And it wasn't just Talmud. There's lots of other volumes of Torah teachings which had to be mastered as well. So Rabbi Shneur Zalman was the candidate of one of the disciples of Rabbi Dov Baer to conquer this area, which was already full of these tremendous minds, because he was an even more superior tremendous mind. It was expected that he would be able to persuade them to follow his teachings, to follow the teachings. And indeed, he succeeded. He succeeded, and he gathered around him tens of thousands of followers. Tens of thousands. It is said that he demanded emes la'amitoi, which means the truth of the truth, absolute truth. And it is said that as a result of that, he acquired 50,000 pupils. But if he wouldn't have been so exacting in what he demanded, and if he would have only demanded truth, but not the truth of the truth, he would have had 100,000 pupils. But that is said about him. Anyway, he gathered around him all of these pupils, and, you know, top men, and also some ordinary people as well. It wasn't just top men.
These men, Rabbi, were they learned in law as well?
Well, Jewish teachings include Jewish law.
So they knew for anything wrong, like a get, anything like that?
Yeah, of course. Now, what I thank you for asking that, but when I said the word top men, I realized that I'm giving a misleading picture, because it implies that it's an elitist movement. An elitist movement that's only catering for the top men. But nothing could be further than the truth. Because the Baal Shem Tov, his message was for also the ordinary folk. He did not believe in elitism at all. He believed in everyone reaching a level of fulfillment. No matter what stage a person begins, his teachings were, you've begun at that stage, and including people that couldn't read. The previous Lubavitcher Rebbe wrote a two-volume work called Memoirs, in which he describes simple Jews who never had a chance of learning any Torah at all. They were blacksmiths, they were farmers, they were, you know, cobblers, and they never had a chance. They couldn't even read, some of them. Mm. And he describes how, with care and love, these people were taught to read and were taught to daven, and they slowly achieved a decent level of observance of Judaism and scholarship. And their children became learned and so on. And all of this, the way of the Baal Shem Tov, was through love. Love, encouragement, building self-esteem. Because prior to the time of the Baal Shem Tov, there was a kind of elitist movement. These great top men look down on the ordinary folk that they regarded as ignorami. And they looked down on them and they had nothing to do with them. They regarded them as, you know, you'll daven in your shul, we'll daven in our shul, and you know, we don't mix with those kind of people. It was an elitism. And the Baal Shem Tov came to break this elitism in a nice way, but by teaching, by educating. In fact, you know, we're digressing a bit, but you know, we can still tell these stories. Please do. Keep an eye on the time for Maariv. We can maybe carry on a little bit later. There's a beautiful story told about how the Baal Shem Tov, he had the top men around him as well. He didn't exclude them. But he also had the ordinary folk. You know, the simple Jews, they used to come to his, what's called a tish. A tish means a table where the Rebbe would sit at the head of the table and they would have a meal, a shalosh shudas on Shabbos afternoon, and there would be a great atmosphere. It wasn't tremendous fare, it would be black bread and herring and so on, but it was the camaraderie that was the great thing. And the Rebbe would give his teachings, but these top men saw, his main disciples, they saw that the ordinary folk were also being treated very nicely. And, you know, he's sharing his food with them and giving them a l'chaim and giving them a bit of herring, and they were so happy, you know, and all they were capable of doing was maybe saying a few psalms. They couldn't learn a piece of chumash even. So that these top men, these great disciples who knew the whole Torah backwards, they were like a bit jealous, like, why is our Rebbe bothering with these ordinary guys? You know, like, well, what can they do? What can they do is say Tillim, say Psalms. So the Baal Shem Tov sensed their peak. P-I-Q-U-E. Their peak means their annoyance. Anger. Their annoyance. He sensed it. So he said to them, he is at the head of the table, like Jeffrey is the Baal Shem Tov. And he says to his pupils, we're the pupils.
No, wrong side.
We're the pupils.
The man with the beard.
Jeffrey's the Baal Shem Tov. Right? And we're the pupils. So he said, put your arm on the next pupil's shoulder. So that it made a ring, a joined ring. He's creating a circuit. And I just have to add that after these simple Jews had their little bit of herring and so on, and he'd been nice to them, they went to the next room and they're saying psalms. So then the Baal Shem Tov put his arm on Jeffrey the Baal Shem Tov put his arm on Michael's shoulder, and his left arm on my shoulder. So it completes the circuit. And as soon as the circuit was completed, these pupils, these disciples, they went into a kind of elevated state, and they hear the most amazing heavenly voices, and they hear the voices of people saying psalms, but in the way it's heard in heaven.
Yes.
Their souls were wrenched from their chests, and they were saying to themselves, if we could only merit this, if only. That was their sentiment. Then the Baal Shem Tov took his hands away from the two neighbors. The spell was broken. It wasn't a spell. It was the circuit was broken.
Yes.
The elevated state was collapsed, and they went back to normal. And they're all like, what happened? What were we seeing? Baal Shem Tov said to them, you know what you were seeing? You were seeing these simple Jews saying those psalms, and that's all they can do, the way it's heard in heaven. Those simple Jews. And he, thereby, by teaching them this important lesson, he was teaching them that there are many ways to God. There are many ways to God. One is through scholarship. If a person's been given the chance to go through an educational system, where he's taught to read, and taught his Chumash, and taught his Mishnayos, and taught his Talmud, taught his Maimonides, and he gets through at the end of it, he's age 20, 20, 24, he's developed, you know, he's a good student, so he will serve God through his Torah teachings. But what happens if someone never had a chance? Well, are they excluded? Baal Shem Tov said, no. God has a different plan for these people. They might be great scholars one day. They could be. Because very often these simple people have got good brains.
Rabbi Akiva.
It's not because they're ignorance.
Rabbi
doesn't
Akiva.
Mean they're stupid. It just means my grandfather never had a very good Jewish education, and never had he left school at 11 or something. And my aunt left school at 12. They were very, very bright, but they didn't know very much because they hadn't had an education. The Baal Shem Tov said these simple people have got their own way of serving, and they can also be great Talmudists eventually if they're given a good chance.
There's a difference between being educated and being streetwise.
So, continuing this, these introductory ideas, we'll obviously try and get back into the mainstream of the text next week, because we're going to be running out of time this week, but just by way of an introduction. So, to stress that the Hasidic teachings are basically catering for everybody. There's no value judgments, there's no spiritual means test. The basic message of Hasidic teachings is that every Jew is of value, and a very high value, and there is somewhere within Torah and its commandments for them to shine and develop. And all it's saying is everyone has their own potential, and if they fulfill their potential, they're as worthy an achiever as someone else with greater potential that achieves their potential. God is only expecting all of us to meet and achieve the potential which he's given us. He does not judge people on the basis of absolute level. In other words, I sometimes use the parable of a ladder. You know, we're all born on a different rung of the ladder. Everyone has a different family background, everyone has different brains. Some people are born with superb brains and some people are born with ordinary brains. Does that make the genius a better person? No. So we're all on a different rung of the ladder. What we're judged on is how many rungs did you climb? So if the ladder's 1,000 rungs and someone started on rung 2 and someone started on rung 22 and the guy on 22 only developed himself to rung 24 and the guy on rung 2 developed himself to rung 10, the guy on rung 2, and he ended up lower than the other guy started, has achieved more.
Because of the effort he's put.
What's the development?
What is?
The development to get to the rung.
Well, we're all born on a rung. We're all given...
Yeah.
The rung is the gifts that God gave us when we were born.
Ah, now I understand.
The family, the environment, the education, the inputs, the emotional makeup, the brains... That's the package that we all
so that's
have.
The, that's a development. And you have to use it.
We use that. That's all a potential. That's potential because we're born like that. Everything that we have, you know, all those factors that we've got when we're born, you know, family, environment, and then the education our parents give us, and the amount of material wealth and spiritual wealth and emotional wealth that we are given or not. Some people are deprived of it, obviously, as we well know. But given that package that we started off with, God says, that's your package, and you run with that as best you can. And if you work on yourself with that kind of package, and you improve yourself, and get yourself to a higher level, to the, you know, utilizing all your capabilities, then as far as God is concerned, that's full achievement.
And he won't give you a divine invitation to make you go up with a little bit of help from him.
He's helping all the time.
Oh, he is.
He's helping all the time.
So if you are a little bit backward, but you achieve what you can learn, it's because he's helped you.
Yeah. There are many stories in this book of memoirs by the previous Rebbe, where he tells, but I mentioned it earlier, where he tells of people who are very simple, they're simple tradesmen, or they had some kind of trade, you know, like some kind of capability, a craftsman of some kind, you know, a blacksmith or a cobbler or whatever, and they made their living in a simple way, or farmers, a balagola, which means a taxi driver.
Or a balabusa.
No pretensions for, you know, becoming a university professor. And he tells a story of how some of these people had aspirations to better themselves spiritually, even though they started off very modestly spiritually. They weren't given a chance. You know, there was terrible poverty in the time of the Baal Shem Tov. People lived in small villages where there were no proper schools. They may have not even lived in a village at all. They could have lived in the woods. If the father was a woodcutter, he'd bring up his family in the middle of a wood, a distance away from the town. And he would only go into the town for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur or other festivals. He'd spend every single day without a shul, without a synagogue, without a school for his kids. And the kids would be brought up. They may not have even known how to read. And this was not a norm, but it was definitely a proportion of the population lived like that.
Is this in modern times, Rabbi?
We're talking now about in the 1600s, 1700s. It was a time of great pressure on the Jewish people. They were economically deprived, they were very poor, they were scattered, uneducated, depressed. There'd been some terrible events in the previous 100 years, false messiahs, massacres. There was a Cossack rebellion, and the Cossacks massacred whole towns of Jews. And the Jews were at a very low ebb when the Baal Shem Tov came on the scene. And his job, he was sent to revive the Jewish people and bring them back materially and spiritually and get them.
And he's the one that completed the circuit and then broke the circuit.
He was the one in that story, yeah. He was the founder of the general Hasidic movement to bring these teachings, to reveal these teachings. They really are part of the Torah anyway. But they're hidden, you know. There are various ideas in the Torah which you have to dig to get them out.
Do you know what, Rabbi? I know we all have to have money to pay bills. And I go to work same as Jeffrey, and David gets his money his way, Peter his way, right? You get your money your way. And me and Jeffrey go to work to get money to pay bills. But do you know, when I ain't got no money, that's when I'm at my happiest. Because I feel, you know, I'm not a rich person, and I'm only working to pay bills and pay for my cab. I've got no savings. I can't save because there's nothing about at the moment. But at the moment, I feel happy because I've got nothing to say. I can go and do this and I can go and do that. I make my own enjoyment. Strange.
Well, that's also an approach. I mean, that's actually a recommended approach in financial matters, what's called Sameach Bechelkai, which means to be happy with your lot. That's one of the things it says in Ethics of the Fathers, Pirkei Avot.
Yes.
It says, Eizehu Ashir, who is rich, the person that's happy with his lot. Whatever he's got, he's happy with. Mm. As long as he's got, obviously, food and shelter and clothing. If a person's starving, they're not going to be easily happy. But a normal person, they don't aspire to wealth.
Really what I was trying to explain myself was that when I'm in a position and I'm like that, you'll laugh at me. I feel like I've got a spiritual cuddle. Don't worry, it's going to be all right.
Well, you're a very spiritual person. I can see that, and you're going to go far. You're going to go far. You're like one of these people in memoirs that you've got the ambition, and that's the main thing. Because once you've got the ambition, the will, then there's no stopping you.
Can I ask you a question, please, Rabbi?
Yeah.
Because Rabbi Shimon couldn't answer it, and he said, "Ask you."
Right.
I've been divorced since 1992, and until I met someone who I lived with, I never went with another woman, because I didn't think it was right. And I was with this woman for 14 years, and now I'm away from her nearly four, and I still haven't been with another woman. Is it a sin to go with another woman, or should I wait until I find someone and get married?
Well, there's a simple answer to that. I mean, first of all,
because I get feelings like any other man.
Well, the Jewish law is very clear on this, that a Jewish man is expected to only have relations with a woman if he's married to her.
I understand that. That's what I believe in.
Right. Well, that's very clear.
So, I should stay...
And, of course, that wife should be a Jewish wife.
Yes. So I should stay, what's the word I'm looking for?
Celibate.
Celibate until I find someone.
That is what is prescribed by Jewish teachings.
So if someone commits adultery and they're married, how do they atone?
It's a very good question. very good question. Judaism teaches that adultery is wrong.
And how do you make it?
As far as Judaism is concerned, a loyal union of one man and one woman is recommended. It does not mean to say that there cannot be divorce. The Torah also allows for divorce as well. So it recognizes that relationships can break down and allows for a man to divorce. But if he does get divorced, then he has to remain celibate until he meets another wife.
There's two women in my life, and both of them want me to sleep with them, and I've refused, and they're getting rather irate. But I still won't do it because I don't know the right answer. But now you've told me, the answer will still be no.
That's the best decision procedure.
It's very hard.
Following the Torah teachings is the best way to conduct one's life, because ultimately the Torah is our way of making sure that we don't go for short-term gain and long-term loss. See, many times a person's tempted to indulge in something which to them makes a lot of sense in the short term, because they get pleasure and they get some short-term fulfillment, but in the long term it's not good for them.
See, I don't want short-term pleasure.
That's it. So the Torah is a way of us channeling ourselves and controlling ourselves so that we have a more analytical approach that says, is this good for me at this time, or is it not? And something might be pleasurable, but not good. As we know, there are many things, and I talk about diets. So the doctors are all telling us, if you overindulge in sugar and salt, it's no good for you. So you might enjoy sweets and salty crisps, but if you keep indulging in that, and eventually we pay for it in medical bills. So we see there is, God has created us with this kind of tension. And the evil inclination is the guy that's encouraging us to go for short-term pleasures. And you blow the consequences. And the Torah is the other voice that says, calm down, hold it, is this the right decision procedure for you in the long term? Will you get benefit from this? And the answer is, the Torah guides us and makes us realize that these short-term pleasures bring long-term grief.
If God loves us all, Rebbe, why does he give us such hard tests in life?
That is part of his love. Because the word for test in Hebrew, right, nisoyoin, is connected with another Hebrew word, which is nes, which means a pole. It's got two meanings. It means a miracle, and it also means a pole. So a nes.
P-O-L-E, pole.
P-O-L-E, a high pole.
A pole, excuse me.
A pole, yes. A tall pole. So what this nisoyon is saying, this test, it's God's way of getting us to a high level. Because the word pole means to reach high. So that's why a miracle is also God's showing his hand, so to speak, to enable us to get to a high level. But the parable of a test, of the difficulties of life, is it's like a hurdle. A hurdle makes you jump higher. Now imagine a hurdle where you don't go down the other side, where you get onto the next plateau. The hurdle is like a step, and you get to the next higher plateau, and then another step comes along. Well, what do? I have to jump, right? I jump, then you can jump to the next. So these challenges are you come to a step, something desk high, you walk up to it, I can't go any further. I've got to get over it. And when you get on top of the desk, you're 3 foot higher. And then you walk along, and you come to the next desk. You get over it. You come, and that's life. That's what God has made steps for us. These tests are really steps. Interesting, I think that the letters are almost the same, without the P anyway. Test, step. They're really stepping higher.
So,
and they look difficult at the time, because you bang against the table, I can't go further, till you realize your way over it is to rise above it.
So, Rebbe, tell me please, what do I have to do to make myself strong and to resist all these temptations because I feel like I've been cheated in life.
The only prescription is...
And I cry a lot over it.
The only prescription is to follow the Torah's teachings. And you're doing exactly that now by starting to learn. And I cannot kid you that it's a quick process.
It's
learning is quite a slow process. Well, you'd be surprised how much progress you make. But that is the prescription, to follow the teachings. And that means to learn them first. And coming to a shiur like this, coming to a lecture and so on, and learning a bit of Chumash, a bit of reading, a bit of teachings, a bit of Jewish law, all of it is part of it's like your diet. You know, we have a varied diet, and it all helps to keep us healthy. And the message never changes. You know, eat the right foods and have a bit of exercise. And the doctors always tell us there's no quick fix. All these diets that, you know, make you lose 20 pounds in 3 weeks, they might do so, but, you know, another 3 months later, it's all back on again, and you're back to where you were. No one can kid you that there's, like, short-term quick fixes. The Torah's approach is slow but steady development. So that, I'm afraid I can't give you quick answer to that.
How do I defeat the devil's temptations?
Well, through learning Torah is one way, coming to a shiur like this, putting some charity in a charity box, you have a 10p in your pocket.
Yeah, I was talking to Rabbi Shimon about it, and I do that in different...
Giving charity helps to overcome these things, prayer helps to overcome... Many of our prayers are asking God for help in overcoming our inclinations. I'll show you a page in your Siddur where you're at in the morning when you get up. You're actually asking God to help us overcome tests.
I find it very hard, Rabbi. I really am finding it very hard mentally.
Well, I don't have a quick answer to you. All I can say is God is helping you. The fact that you have come here and you're starting to learn and you're full of enthusiasm for it is a really blessed thing to have, because there's thousands of people out there that A, are not interested in learning, right? They haven't found an opportunity to do so, and they're not even looking for an opportunity to do so, and they don't have an ambition to even find it. And you've been blessed by having been discovered by Jeffrey.
Yeah, bless him.
I'm telling you, you've been blessed. You've been picked out. You've won a raffle. You've won a jackpot.
We started.
You've been picked out by God, and He's saying, "I'm here to help you," and you've been given, or you have, the tools, because, you know, ambition to improve and to learn is a key thing.
Started out a big discussion, didn't it, on that book I'm reading still, will you let me
know? Oh yes, there's the on Yoizel. It talks about how it's not true and how it's all been
took out of proportion.
Finagled, yeah, as they say.
Well, he existed oh, yes, as a person, but he was his concepts were hijacked, basically.
Yeah, they said that he was cut down from the tree, or where he was crucified, and they buried him. But then it's explained, and then they explain. He tries to, the chap who writes the book says, it was cut down on a Friday night. It was Shabbos. They don't bury on the Shabbos. So, and it's like, and that's how it's all...
It's been doctored
up, yeah.
But the Jews didn't cut him down from the cross.